NBL Pocket Podcast. I'm joined today by NBL 20 MVP from the Perth Wildcats, Bryce Cotton. We talk about a great number of topics from college to the NBA to EuroLeague to NBL 20 and 21 and everything in between. The full list of topics is too long, but the full list of topics is in the description, so drop down and have a look there. First things first, Bryce has a new fashion line out, and if you're interested, head over to BryceCotton.com.au. There's autographs, prints, as well as apparel, and that's apparel for men, women, and children. And most importantly, when you spend over $100 there, you go in the running to win a game-worn Bryce Cotton jersey. That is for a limited time only, so go on to there. But Bryce goes on to talk about the brand and more of that in our interview. I really enjoyed my time talking to Bryce Cotton for some pretty simple reasons. For example, when we were talking about academics, he changed GPA and US school jargon to the Australian equivalent for me. That level of emotional intelligence to do that for me was really endearing and charming, and I was also really flattered. Also, Bryce dropping the born in Melbourne to bun. You know, the word reads as Melbourne, but you know, obviously we pronounce it Melbourne. And the fact that Bryce does that, it just shows that his level of commitment to Australia is genuine, and hopefully that serves him well in his search for citizenship and potentially the Boomers. Bryce calls himself a student of the game, and Bryce is a student of the game. It doesn't come across in the audio, but we did our interview with video. But when I hold up Boddy Nodger's book, Marvelous, to tell him about, you know, good books he's read on the NBL, I grabbed it and flashed it up to the screen, and Bryce was leaning in, trying to get a good look at the book and see who, you know, the cover was and all that sort of stuff. And so when he says he's a student of the game, you know, he means it. After these interviews, I'm always saying, you know, damn it, I should have asked that question. Happens every time, and this was no exception. This time when Bryce said that one of his favorite subjects at school was literature and that he was a Kobe Bryant fan, I should have asked Bryce about scouting his own teammates. That's right, his own teammates, which is something that Kobe Bryant used to do after he picked up the practice after reading Bill Russell's book. So that would have been a good opportunity to talk about that and sports books, but oh well, c'est la vie. Bryce is a super thoughtful guy. He takes these little gentle pauses before answering things. Now, I could have edited those out to make this interview appear snappier, but I felt it was important to leave it in so you, the listener, get a sense and a feel for Bryce's pensiveness and thoughtful nature and even his composure. He's a natural entertainer, and I think you'll really enjoy this chat. A reminder, if you like the show, give the show a rating and, of course, write a review. And more importantly, subscribe for more NBL content. It's coming out every week. But for now, Bryce Cotton, enjoy.
I guess I'll start by saying Tucson's got three really famous people in my eyes. Linda Ronstadt, the singer. Barbara Eden, the genie from I Dream of Jeannie. And Sean Elliott. Have you got a favorite of the three?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Sean Elliott on that one.
Makes sense. First of all, thanks for coming back to the NBL. I'm sure I speak for a lot of people when I say we really enjoy watching you play. I'm certainly one of them. I feel like your success in the NBL is due to a number of things, but most obvious to me is your endurance. If you remember James Ennis, he was before your time. He played for the Wildcats, but he was so much faster and quicker and could just jump so much higher than the next best guy in the NBL. He was incredible to watch. To me, your crowning ability is your endurance. You jump as high on your first jump shot as your last jump shot of the game. Do you agree with my assessment of your game?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people talk about the elevation of my jump shot. And, you know, obviously I'm not the tallest guy on the court. So the higher elevation I get, the better look it is for me to get a good shot. But yeah, endurance has definitely been big time for me. I've had to play heavy minutes ever since college, so my body's conditioned to just run nonstop, fortunately.
Do you have anything that supports my theory? Do you do like a beep test or a pacer test with the Wildcats?
No, I think I've only done a beeper test maybe once in my entire life. That was a while ago.
Do you remember your score?
No.
Okay, oh, bummer.
I hate heat tests. Yeah, only done that once.
The other question, a quick question I have for you is, you don't line up the seams when you shoot it. Like most guys, even at the foul line, when you've got the time to do it, you like to have it on a slight angle. That's your own thing. Why is that?
Yeah, so I've said the same thing to myself when I watch myself shoot at the free throw line. So I actually do line up the seams, but for whatever reason, like once I bring the ball up, I tilt my hand a little bit to where it looks crooked. But when I place my hand on the ball, it is lined up, but it looks weird like once it's up here. I've noticed that as well.
Because like that's Larry Bird says it, like the first thing he does when he catches it is he lines up the seams and he gets it so that it's, you know, perfect spiral. I don't know. I'm going to watch again. I don't know. Does the ball come out of your hands and it's like turning like that? It is even turning on a bit of an angle, or the panels are slightly off. It's most unique.
It could be the way I, you know, snap my wrist, but when we're playing like a regular game and if it's a catch and shooter off the dribble, I don't have time to find the seams. But yeah, for the free throw line, yeah, it is weird because I do, you know, like I said, I line it up, but once it's up here, that ball does look a little crooked. I don't even know how to explain that.
Despite being a good shooter of shot, doctors like tapped you on the shoulder, you know, some guy with white socks pulled up to his knees and been like, hey, you got to do this. So tried to change his shot. You know how guys do that?
Yeah.
You claim Providence recruited you because you're a good student and you bump up the team's GPA. What is your GPA? Give people the Australian equivalent.
So I graduated high school with a 3.4 GPA, and I think that's probably
student.
Yeah, it's like a lot of A's and a few B's.
Okay.
But a fun fact is when I was a freshman, so that was year 9 in high school, I had a 4.0 GPA, which is straight A's. And I said to myself that basically I was on track to get a academic scholarship and I didn't want that. Like, I wanted basketball to be the reason. So I purposely dropped my grades a little bit. Like, yeah. So I got a couple C's and B's the next year, and you know, obviously school got harder and I was never able to get that 4.0 back, but I picked my grades back up after year 10, but I purposely dropped them just a little bit.
Did you have a favorite subject?
My favorite subject has probably been history or literature. My whole life. Yeah, pretty good ride.
I was watching your documentary, The Uncompromising Journey. In it, you spoke about Chico State. I'll leave that for another time. People can see that documentary for that story. But the Chico State T-shirt, you took it to Providence. Did it make it to Perth?
No, I've actually lost that shirt. I need to find another one and buy another one just for, you know, memory's sake. But yeah, sad thing, I've lost it.
Maybe you could fly. They could fly you back out there, get one, and just come straight back like they did all those years ago, you know?
That's the least they could do.
Last question, quick fire question. You're born in 92. Are you a Jordan guy? Like, we just had The Last Dance. Were you aware of his career when you were younger, or are you getting into it now, or did you enjoy that series?
Yeah, I'm a real student of the game, so very well of Jordan. But yeah, it was just crazy to see, you know, all the things that he did again, and I pretty much knew the majority of the stuff they had out there. But yeah, I wish I could have been alive for that whole stint of his career, especially in the early 90s, like alive enough to know what's going on. But Kobe's my all-time favorite, but obviously ultimate respect for Jordan.
Let's talk about your brand. You're wearing the T-shirt there. C11, Bryce Cotton, the motto being faith in a dream. I read the creeds on your website, and I suggest everyone does the same thing over at brycecotton.com.au. What I like about the brand and the message is it's versatile. Well, the message is versatile. You're a religious person, and people can take that part of the brand of faith in a dream, or they can take it just to mean like you have a goal and trust in yourself to get it done. Is that what you were hoping people would take from the brand and the message?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I wanted, because, you know, faith in a dream, it's so broad yet so precise, you know, just depending on how you choose to look at it, or, you know, whatever's going on in your life. And I felt that, you know, my story could resonate with so many people, because I was never, especially from a basketball standpoint, I was never expected to do, you know, anything with, you know, basketball and things of that sort. And I just had a hard work ethic and a vision of, you know, where I wanted to get to. And yeah, that motto has really stuck with me. And just as much as it was, you know, a spiritual thing for me, it was definitely just, you know, trying to make my dreams come true as well. So it was almost like a double entendre.
My favorite Bible verse, I sent this to you, is Hebrews 11:1. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the convictions of things not seen. It's kind of like, it would be the verse I'd choose that most represents the brand. Did you have it in mind, that verse in mind, when you made the brand? And do you have a favorite verse?
No, so I didn't have that verse in mind when I made the brand. I honestly didn't think of any verse in particular. It was literally just faith in a dream. But my favorite verse would probably be trust in the Lord. Lean not on your own understanding and trust in the Lord with all your heart. And that's in Proverbs. But basically for me, it just represented that, you know, have faith in something. You don't have to know how something's going to work out. Just believe that it is. And when I tie that over to my basketball career, I always believed that I was going to be a professional basketball player, even when it didn't seem likely. I didn't know how it was going to happen, but I just believed somehow, some way it would if I worked hard and played my part. So I resonated with that verse.
I think, and when you said it before, like you said, the message of the brand is very like everyone can take their own thing. You can even see like a sort of a Star Wars motif in it, kind of like the hero's journey, you know, like Luke Skywalker, the young boy, is not expected to do much. Some people help him along the way. He finds his own stuff. You know, he just has his own, he has his faith and a dream, and he just kind of goes for it. I really like it. Tell people about the game worn jersey competition you're doing on your website at the minute.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously to celebrate, obviously me coming back and things of that sort, I just wanted to do something exciting. And if they purchase anything over $100, then they automatically go into the draw for a chance to win a game worn jersey from this championship season. So I felt that it would be exciting.
Do you remember what game it's from?
Yeah, I know one of the games, it was early in the year, we played against Melbourne. And obviously Melbourne's always some tough games. So I think that'll be, that should probably be pretty fun for somebody to have, especially because we won that game.
Let's talk about NBL 20. Cairns and predominantly DJ Newball. I thought when I watched the games, they were the team that held you to your lowest averages. Four of your six lowest scoring games came against Cairns, some of which in the semifinals. What was it about Cairns and DJ Newball that caused this or gave you a bit of troubles?
I mean, DJ Newball's a great defender. I don't think it was particularly him. Cairns had a great defensive scheme intact, especially in the playoffs where they'd play off of a guard where basically I'm seeing one and a half to maybe two or three people every play. So if I come off a screen, there's a guy hard hedging where there's a center and then DJ Newball. And if I happen to get past them, there's somebody else waiting on me who's not guarding their man. And, you know, that's just going to make life difficult. So they had a good defensive scheme in place.
Did you feel that on the floor and were like, you're looking at the other four guys on the court, like, hey, look at the attention I'm getting. Be ready. You know, if you've watched those Last Dance episodes, it's like, hey, be ready.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a testament to our team as well. And, you know, it doesn't frustrate me if a team tries to play me that way because we have guys that can knock shots down. So if I'm going to get that much defensive attention, somebody's going to be open. So it's going to be easy for us to score if they're getting wide open looks.
Having said all that, game one, you had 42 points. The other two games, you had 11 and 5. What was different about game one that allowed you to get the 42?
I think they were worried about everybody, you know, they were worried about everybody. So they kind of played everybody from a man up standpoint. And when I was able to get loose, everything just kind of keyed in, I feel, on me. And they just wanted to make sure that basically somebody else beat them. That's kind of what we say when we double team players. We'll say, well, make the other guys beat us instead of whoever the main scorer is. And like I said, fortunately, we have offensive weapons. We're able to do so.
Did you feel the difference from game one to game two and three? Like game one, you were like, okay, they're kind of, you know, the coverage is good. And then game two and three, you were like, oh, this is totally changed. You could feel it.
I didn't notice it until film after the second game. After game two, that's when I noticed it once we watched on film. And then game three, I was prepared for it, but anytime I was able to get an open look, I'd be so excited, you know, I'm just shooting the shots a little too hard because it wasn't too often I was getting open looks after that. So, definitely had a Had to check my mental there, but, you know, found other ways to impact the game.
I feel like Cairns really isolated you as, like, we're going after Bryce, hell or high water, we're going to try and stop him. I felt like Cairns were you and the Perth Wildcats' biggest challenge to the title this year. That's all due respect to Sydney. I felt like Sydney either couldn't contain you or weren't doing it as explicitly as Cairns were trying to do. Do you agree with me? Do you feel like things came easier against the Kings?
I definitely think Cairns by far is the hardest opponent all year, just off the simple fact that people don't understand how talented that team is. Like, they had Scott Machado, they got Cam Oliver, and then, you know, DJ Newble, who's coming off a career year, and they had good supporting cast with Noy, Big Nate. You know, they had a team, man, and they played together. And I think the fact that they were coming off of, not those players, but the team is coming off a losing season, they had that nothing to lose mentality, and it allowed them to play free, and they became dangerous. And I think halfway through the year, they realized how good they can be, and they really got rolling. So it was always a tough game for us against them, even in the regular season.
The travel, I suppose, is the other thing as well. Like, do you feel that going all the way over there and all the way back and so on?
No, I don't use that one as an excuse. Like, I mean, ever since I've been in the NBL, I've been playing in Perth, so these travels are normal to me. I don't know anything different. And especially in playoffs, I always look at it as they're doing the same travel we are. So it's leveled out. So I try to not look at it that way.
Let's jump to the finals. Game 3. That was a game with no crowds in Sydney. Yeah, in Sydney. You got hit on a play. I think it was sort of Jay Sean Tate and Daniel Kickett kind of clipped you on your way to the basket. Because there was no crowd there, it caught up the audio of you saying, like, hey, they're playing after the whistle, or you got to tidy it up, they're playing after the whistle. You're a traditionally pretty cool customer. Were they smacking you around, or is that reaction standard for you?
Yeah, so I think just the fact that there's no crowd there, you get to hear everything as a fan. So that type of chatter is normal, and it's probably much worse on, you know, different occasions. But I had a look back at that game when I said that, and I thought they had called the foul, like, on the floor way before I was going up to shoot. I didn't realize it was a shooting foul, and that was probably the second or third time they had done something to me after the whistle that quarter. And so, yeah, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. So I had an issue with that. But the play, I guess, I got upset about once I watched on film, I realized it was a shooting foul. So they kind of had a right to do that. But the few plays before where they didn't is kind of what ticked me off.
Do you think that was part of their strategy? Like you said, Cairns were really going to, you know, double team you hard and come off guys. Do you feel like Sydney's strategy was, we're going to bump him, hit him, push him, kind of like Steph Curry in that finals against the Cavs a couple of years ago? Do you think that was their strategy?
I mean, it was definitely some physicality for sure. And, I mean, they even said it in one of the interviews after the games, that they're going to try to, you know, knock me on the floor a couple times, tire me out, things of that sort. So, you know, that's playoff basketball. You know, you come up with your game plan, we'll come up with ours, and, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Just a departure. I took your interview in with Overtime with Corey and that. You seem to pay attention to some press. Like, you're one of a couple of guys who will say stuff like, oh, I heard what you said, or Corey, I heard what you said, and, you know, you got a couple of things wrong or whatever. You seem to listen to the NBL media pretty closely. Do you consume a lot of the media and take it in and enjoy the hearing a little bit of the doubt and using it?
Yeah, so I listen with a closer ear to any negative talk or talk that I would perceive as negative or disrespect. Yeah. And, you know, quite often I'm not going to mention that I hear it or things of that sort. But with some of the stuff Corey has said since he came into the league, it had been brewing for a while. So it felt good to let him know some of the things that was going on in my mind. But yeah, it's all good, though. Like, it's all good. Oh, that was a fun interview.
Lamar Patterson. I believe you guys both share the same agent, if realgm.com is accurate.
Yeah.
Lamar was taken with the 48th pick in the 2014 draft, the same draft you were undrafted in. When you first saw Lamar Patterson suit up for the Brisbane Bullets, did you recognize him? Were you like, okay, I'm going to, were you fired up to give him a little bit of extra something? How was that like?
I've been familiar with Lamar since college. Before the traditional Big East broke up, Lamar played in the Big East Conference with me. So I've played against him a few times, and you know, he's just as good now as he was then. He's always been a great scorer. And we also played in the D League together for a couple games when he would come down from the Atlanta Hawks on assignment. And we played a few games together, so we're really familiar with each other's game, but there was no animosity or feeling like I had something to prove. Because that same year, I had a chance to be drafted through like a draft and stash route, but that just wasn't for me, and I chose to decline that offer.
Is Lamar the best player in the NBL behind you? This is a follow-up question I had. Or do you, like, if you, what do you think? No, actually, I'll rephrase it. Is he the most challenging player in the NBL after you?
I'm honestly just so caught up in, you know, what I need to do. I don't rank other players, but I would say for Lamar, what he's done, you've got to give him credit. You know, the load that he carries over there in Brisbane, and for him to bring them into the playoffs the year before last was a tremendous feat. And just missing the playoffs this past year, but he had a hell of a season as well. He's so consistent, you know, and obviously he's been here 2 years, but he hasn't had a down year yet. And you definitely got to give him credit to be able to play at that level and be winning, because some guys can put up crazy numbers, but, you know, losing teams.
From an entertainment standpoint, is he the player you most like to watch? Like, are there players in the NBA who you just tune in like you're like watching a TV show, who you just like enjoy watching their game? Is he one of them?
Yeah, so, I mean, I watch any NBA game I get a chance, but he's definitely one of those guys, especially if it's a close game, he's going to put on a show in that fourth quarter, and he always comes up big. So it's definitely exciting to watch him play and watch any player step up in the big moments, but Lamar's been known to do that. So
let's go to the EuroLeague. You played in Turkey. By your own account, your time there was unpleasant, and by your standards, probably unproductive. I think you probably agree with me there. Like 10 points per game. I had a look at your logs there. Like, your minutes went up and down like a yo-yo. You're a starter for four games, getting 30 minutes. Then you were down to 20, 10, 18. Like, it was just up and down, up and down. Starter for eight games. Then you went to the bench. Eight games you started. Then you were the bench. Two more games. Anyway, what were your struggles in Europe on and off the court?
My struggles in Europe, one
let's
was...
talk about. Let's go on the court. Like, and be as technical as you want. Like, obviously, you run the flex in Perth. Like, what was it in Europe that they ran that you just couldn't quite find your groove?
I would say on the court, the biggest issue is that just the style of play is completely different. Whereas in America or Australia, you know, you're allowed some individual, you know, freelance. Whereas in Europe, it's completely team oriented, half court offense, like not overly fast paced, and all of those things are not my style. You know, I'm a smaller guard, very fast, you know, quick, athletic. So I like to get out there and run and use those things to my advantage, but that's not really the style of play. And then when you mix into that, you know, I have very inconsistent minutes and I'm not one of their go-to guys on the team. You know, I'm not going to be very useful if I'm just running, you know, from one corner to the other. That doesn't do much for me. And it was difficult. And then you carry over into that. You're in a foreign country, doesn't really speak your language. And, you know, you really start to feel like you're miles and miles away from home. So then the mental aspect of it kicks in, both on and off the floor. So it was definitely just a challenge that, like I say, I definitely struggled with, and wasn't the best of experiences, especially for first time playing in Europe.
I wish at that time I could have tapped you on the shoulder and given you this book. This is Marvelous by Boddy Nodge. It's about Brett Maher, who played in Adelaide, Australian player. He went over and played in, I think it was Turkey, and said the exact same thing. slow style of play. Like, he was a point guard as well, a scoring point guard, I suppose. You know, late in the shot clock, they'd get their shots. It was very seldom would you come up, get an open look early in transition and take it. It was not the style. That's a book you might want to read. And he's a player who would be probably the player I'd say is your greatest comp. He jumps real high off the floor when he shot his jump shot. Exact same way that you do, Brett Maher. Did you have any conversations with the coaching staff about, like, you're obviously having this ill fit or whatever, and did you ever have a conversation with them? And this is really for people in their own work or any business who kind of aren't fitting in their workplace. Did you have that conversation with them? Like, I think I'd be better if I did this, and they disagreed with you, or did you have that conversation at all?
I mean, somewhat, and not in the words of, you know, I'd be better if this happened. Like, I just kind of asked the coach, you know, what do I need to do to get my playing time? What is my role? Like, I wasn't even sure what my role was, you know? And, you know, you kind of hear the cliche, you know, just keep working hard, you know, and if you do well in practice and work hard, you'll get the minutes. And, you know, like, that stuff doesn't really say anything, but that's the things I was hearing. And, you know, you have a great game on, you know, one of the games where maybe I played 25, 30 minutes, and all of a sudden, you know, they love you, and then you play 15 minutes the next game and don't do too much, you know, it's back to the same old thing. So it was just a huge roller coaster ride, and I was just, that's the best way to put it for me.
Shane Larkin, who've played in the NBA for a bit, he was your sort of pseudo replacement with, what was the name of the Turkish team? I can never pronounce it. Anadolu Efes?
Anadolu Efes.
On paper, you guys are quite a similar player. Similar weight, similar height, scoring, sort of setup, point guard. What do you think's made him successful with that team over there?
I mean, it's similar to anything. It's all about, especially at the professional level, it has more to do with opportunity rather than talent, because everybody's talented at this level. And for him, I think, you know, he's found his niche, and they, from what I've seen, they basically let him run the show, and he's flourishing in it. And there's another guy, Scotty Wilbekin. He played out here in the NBL, and, you know, I, from what I heard, he wasn't too much of a standout.
No, he was unspectacular, yeah.
He goes over to Turkey, and, you know, he's plays out of his mind, and now he's a big time European player. So it's just all about the opportunity for a team that's going to let you play your game to your best abilities. And I think that's a big reason why Shane Larkin is excelling over there.
Did you ever play against him in college or anywhere else before, Shane Larkin?
Shane Larkin? No, never played against him.
That'd be interesting. Let's jump to the NBA. Second round of the 2014 NBA draft. The Spurs are calling you. They offer you a draft and stash. You declined that option, knowing what you know now about international basketball, and maybe you could have ended up with Perth anyway under that option. Do you think that taking that option from the Spurs, that draft and stash, do you think that would have given you a more stable entry into the NBA and perhaps a longer tenure there?
No, I don't think so. And it's something that, you know, I thought about the first year, but no, because there's so many guys that I do know who have been drafted in the second round, stashed overseas, and never ever play in the NBA. So I like the fact that I followed my gut, because I wanted to make the NBA still that year, and it worked out. And even with the opportunities I got, in the short span I did, I showed what I can do. So I'm happy with how it worked out, and I wouldn't have changed it for anything, even looking back hindsight.
Were they talking about where they were going to stash you internationally, or they just said we're going
to? No, it didn't get that far, because, you know, they have to figure out, okay, are you okay with that first? And then
right.
But yeah, I mean, if I have to guess, I would have assumed that it probably would have been somewhere in France or something like that, considering Tony Parker owns a team out there. But
yeah,
that's safe, just me guessing.
Yeah, it would have. Yeah, safe guess is Europe somewhere. There's not many guys who are drafted and stashed in the NBL. I went back and had a look at early scouting reports of yours, and they really just seem to parrot and paraphrase from one another. The big criticism being too small for his position, defensively, da 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 da. They all seem to say the same thing. Derek Bodner was one scout I read who I quite liked his sort of scout of your game. He described your game, you know, he described it, but more importantly, he described why you put up the numbers you put up and why you played the way you did. Like, he talked about the sort of situation you were in Providence and injuries and, you know, a few other things. you didn't mention the meniscus tear. I don't know what year you had that, but that didn't come up. My question to you is, did you speak to Bodner? Like, did you sit down and have an interview with him and that's why he wrote what he wrote, or why was that?
I don't believe so. The name doesn't ring a bell, but a lot of times with scouts, I feel like if you're not one of the household names, whatever one person is going to say about you, if you have a scouting report on you, it'll be copied and pasted. And it's not something I haven't heard before. I mean, I even had scouting reports saying I wasn't an athletic guard.
Athleticism was another one they criticized, which I found bizarre.
Yeah, it was just absolutely crazy. But obviously, those were scouts that didn't do their homework. But, you know, things like that happen. And, you know, you can't really control that, though, too much.
I mean, with, like, LaMelo Ball and Hampton in the league this year, Australia and myself anyway, I got my first real insight into that whole scouting world. That's not really a thing that happens in the NBL so much. I hadn't until this season. I think that... did any scouts sort of like sit down with you and try and investigate your story and your thing? Did you sit down with any scouts at all?
No, you don't really sit down with scouts and talk. They more so just watch you from afar and, you know, publish whatever it is. But there's not too many scouting reports, I think, that sum up my game the way I feel, you know, exposes all my capabilities.
Because I saw that one where LaMelo Ball sits down with, I don't know who it is actually, but he sits down and watches his game tape with a scout for ESPN. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, I don't think Bryce had that luxury or that courtesy.
Yeah, you got to remember, LaMelo's about to go in the lottery, so his situation would be a lot different than mine.
That's what I got. Your senior year at Providence, you explode. 20 some points, assists, stupid minutes per game. Like, your team has a bunch of overtime games. You're playing more minutes than is, you know, almost physically possible within the time frame. You win the Big East tournament for the first time in however long, you'll tell me. I'm a big believer in taking into account the intangibles, like what a guy, an upside or something, but also measuring someone on what they've actually done. Like, you, with stats now, you can look at what a guy actually produces on the court. And it almost seems like, in your particular instance in the scouting report, that took a backseat. Like, what you had actually done, which you can actually see and touch and feel, was less important than, if it was a bit longer, it was a bit tall, whatever. What did people say when you pointed to this, like, stupidly good college resume and they were still like, well, we still like other players for the draft? How do you respond to that? Were you surprised?
It wasn't a household name. That's all it comes down to. Because when you talk about, you know, some of the big time, I guess, guards at that time, even if they were around my size, you know, they didn't have the numbers that I had, but maybe they played at a bigger school. And so for whatever reason, they feel like they're a better translation to the NBA game or whatever the case may be. But it was definitely frustrating because every question that they asked about me, I answered every year. You know, first of all, just being able to show that I can play at that level. And my junior year, because I played the two guard my junior year, leading the Big East in scoring. And nobody knew about the torn meniscus because I hadn't put that out there.
Right.
Led the Big East.
Would you have, if people had asked, would you have said it?
No, because I was on the draft board at that time. And I didn't, you know, knowing, like, I didn't have a household name and I'm playing my way into that, I didn't want anything interfering with that.
How'd you get on that mock board? Was there a certain scout that you remember who you saw in the crowd and thought, oh, that maybe there was a connection there? Or no, you don't know. You just popped up on there one time.
I was just putting up numbers, man. Next thing you know, I'm on the draft. So anyway, lead the Big East in scoring my junior year. Going into my senior year, I have the NBA scouts' attention now. And the one thing I heard was that, we know he can score, but in the NBA, he's going to play point guard. We need to know, can he actually play point guard?
Yeah.
So because of another injury my senior year from another player, I was able to play point guard. Still was second in the conference in scoring at, 22?
22.
And first in the conference in assists. So my one and only
This is the Big East, too. This is a big conference. This is a big, yeah.
in my one and only year where they ask, you know, can this guy play point guard? You know, I average 22 points a game, lead the conference in assists, and we win a Big East championship and go to the tournament.
Win games, yeah.
Tournament for the first time in over a decade. I'm pretty sure that answers the question, but, yeah. You know, still doubts and, you know, didn't even get invited to the draft combine. So being overlooked, no matter what I do, it's something I'm used to.
I talked to Rashad Phillips on this podcast, who was a former Wildcat import. I don't even know Rashad. He played for Detroit Mercy University, put up, again, freakishly good numbers, was on a couple of draft boards, and it didn't happen. He could remember the name, where they went to college, where they were picked, and by what team of the whole draft that he was mocked to go in, which I found kind of funny. I read another scan report of yours from Mike Schmitz. He talks about a 5-on-5-on-5-on-5 tryout with the LA Clippers, in which we were talking about Scotty Wilbekin before, in which Scotty Wilbekin was there. I think Casey Prather was there. Do you remember this tryout? They say that his report says that Scotty Wilbekin's defense on you really stood out. Do you remember that tryout? Do you remember Scotty Wilbekin defensively?
I remember the tryout. And again, like, obviously Scotty's a great player. The defense didn't seem stand out to me, but I remember just hearing as a common theme, like, my agent telling me at the time, they know you can score, really show you can pass and be a distributor. And the reason why my agent was telling me that was, look at the season you just had. You know, you had your assists and you had the scoring, and they're still down, and can you play the point guard? So they said, don't even worry about scoring, like, be a distributor. So that's what I tried to focus on. And then the second I did that, all of a sudden I can't score against elite people. So after a while of trying to fit this mold that, you know, I'm thinking they want of me, I eventually just got back to playing my game, because I was like, you know what, they'll never be happy, so I'll just be happy doing what I know I do best.
It's like mashed potatoes, or like robbing Peter to pay Paul. Like, you're trying to do so many things, and like, you're chasing your tail with trying to impress everyone and all that stuff. Let's talk about NBL 21 and beyond. Damian Martin looks set to retire. I don't know if you can comment on that or not, but I think he might. And the reason why I think he will is after the after you guys got announced as the winners for NBL 20, you got up, you're in the back row, you walked, kind of took a strange route to get to Damo, by the way. You kind of got up, went around this way and back around again. Is that why you got up and congratulated him first? Had he sort of been wink, wink, nudge, nudge that he was going to retire at the end of last season?
Yeah, and it's something we didn't talk about, but, you know, it's just something that I kind of assumed, like, okay, this really could be his last year. So if it is, you know, I wanted to show him, you know, and express to him how happy I was that if this is his last go around, that he's going out on a high note. So that's definitely what, you know, that greet was all about, especially going to him first.
Has there been any talk of like the construction of next year's team, or do you have your own wishes?
No, there hasn't been too much talk about it yet, because, I mean, we still have to figure out the construction of the league. Like, when is it even going to start and things of that sort. So I think once that kind of is starting to clear up and we have an idea of when the season will be, then you can kind of key in on building your team.
I think the exciting thing without Damian Martin is you get the chance to kind of answer all those scouts. And even people now who still say, like, oh, Bryce is a shooting guard. They like to get that 101 basketball textbook out and say, oh, no, he's an off guard. And, you know, this might be the chance to do a bit of that too and show a bit of that off, which I'm excited to watch you do. Imports, you talked about the construction of the league and that. Imports have been slimmed to 2, down from 3. If you can't pick either Tariqo White or Miles Plumlee to be your second import, who from the crop of NBL import talent would you choose to play with and why?
Well, yeah, if we're doing this hypothetical thing,
the structure of the Wildcats, like who you got, let's say Nick Kay doesn't return, and knowing what you've already got and what you need, who would you go with?
And you said hypothetically, I'm not allowed to pick Tariqo or Nick.
Miles.
I would say I'd probably roll with Devondre Walker. Like, I'm familiar with his game, and he had a brief stint back out here with Southeast Melbourne this year. You know, getting his feet wet again, but, you know, I know what he can do, and I know we you know, can play well together because I know his style of play and his mentality. So if I'm not allowed to pick any of those two guys, then yeah, DeAndre Walker comes to my mind first.
There's a line from The Last Dance that really stands out to me when Jordan kind of goes like, listen, we have we're entitled to defend what we have until we lose it. And I feel like that's kind of you and Tirico now. This is, you know, I feel like you guys are building something. You've won every year. It's like, yeah, I think you should be entitled to go again. I mean, I'm not saying anything, but that would be, I think it's a storyline in the NBL that, you know, long-term storylines in the NBL are kind of tough. And this is one that's quite slowly maturing over there. And hopefully, yeah, that's why I hope it comes back anyway.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, man. And me and Tirico was talking about that as well, like The Last Dance and things of that sort. And I told him he's already had a three-peat of his own because he won the championship in Korea before he came here. And then right. He won back-to-back out here. So I told him he's, you know, he's almost ahead of me in a sense that he's got his three-peat. I've never had one of those before.
Not yet. We'll see what happens. My last question. Getting a haircut. In Perth, I had a friend from Florida stay with me for about a year in Perth, and he could never find a barber who was used to cutting his hair. Antoine was his name. Those first couple of months, he got some pretty crazy haircuts because people in Perth, Perth barbers weren't used to cutting black people's hair. Where do you go to? Did you have the same struggle as my dear friend?
Yeah. So at first, I didn't go anywhere for the first few weeks, but Casey Prather at the time, he was my teammate, put me on. But yeah, so I get cut by a guy named Fats now. So, and he's actually from America originally. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I have no issues with him cutting my hair.
Because some of these haircuts, this friend of mine, some of the haircuts he got, I was like, nah, it's not going to work. So he ended up just shaving his head and just kept it real short the whole time he was in Perth. That's all I got for you, Bryce. I really appreciate it. I'm a huge fan of your story, you know, from Tucson, Arizona, you know, population, what, 600,000 people, to then Rhode Island and Providence University, you know, the biggest little state in the union, a big school, but a small place, you know, unlike a lot of players, you're not the son of a former player. I think that's coming through now. Like Steph is a son of a former player and Clay Thompson's a former player. A lot of sons of former players. You're not. You've just come out of nowhere. You know, you've worked tirelessly, fought through, you know, and you go to the website, you see all this epilepsy, rejection, politics. You've gone through all that stuff to, you know, become a really successful professional basketball player. Love to watch you play. And you did it all with a faith and a dream. You know, I really enjoy watching you play. Best wishes. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
That's it. I really hope you enjoyed this interview. To get your hands on some C11 Faith and a Dream merchandise, head to brycecotton.com.au. There's autographed prints and apparel for men, women, and children. And when you spend over 100, you go into the running to win that game-worn Bryce Cotton jersey we spoke about. Also on the site, there's Bryce's creeds and his motto and his story of his life and a really interesting and entertaining documentary, The Uncompromising Journey. I watched it. They informed a lot of the questions I asked in this. Well worth your time. Go and have a watch of that for sure. And again, give the show a rating, write a review, and subscribe for more. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world right now, and I really hope that this interview was a nice little escape for you. Thanks very much, and I will see you again.